Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you serious?
So this is How to Kill an Hour. I'm Marcus Bronzy. There's many ways to kill some time out there. Thank you for killing some time with us. Before we kick off today's show, first thing I want to do is remind you that we have a website. It's 2018, so those exist everywhere. Ours is howtokillanhour.com. And when you get there, you can sign up to our mailing list where you can find out about new ways to kill time, find out about all the cool competitions and giveaways we're doing. We've also got some videos up there. And of course, we'll let you know when we drop brand new podcasts. Anyway, let's crack on with today's show. Today, Billy and I are joined by...
I'm Johnny Cochran, comedian, presenter, actor, lover, friend, and one half of Johnny and Inel.
I'm Inel Tomlinson, I'm the other half.
Are you a lover and a friend as well?
Yeah, to certain people.
Yeah. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey,
it's a pleasure to have you on board. I'm going
to
be honest with the listener. We did actually have an intro that we just recorded, and producer Billy is a savage, and because his headphones weren't turned up, he demanded that we press stop and start again. How do you feel about what are your first impressions of Billy, guys?
Yeah, Billy just gunned it down.
He's very straight as well, isn't he? Like, as you were talking there, he went, "I'm dead."
Man's dead.
Restart
the thing.
Which we now means that there was no sound coming from his cans. So, yeah.
He basically says if there's no sound coming through his headphones, he's not alive, and therefore How to Kill an Hour is not alive. Therefore, we can't carry on with the show.
This is a real existential kind of...
It's that new street lingo, man.
Exactly.
Billy just boiled it down and went, "I'm dead."
I'm the captain of this ship.
Oh, I am the captain now. I am the captain now.
If Billy can't hear, the podcast can't go on.
Dead captain.
Jeez. So, guys, who are you? How would you describe yourselves? If I said, who are Johnny and Inel, what would you say?
Britain's first black comedy double act on TV.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Ain't wheeled that one out for a while, have we?
I like that one. Yeah. Well, yeah, we've been together for about 8 years now, right? Working together professionally. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think we had the Johnny and Inel show, which was on CBBC. Some people may have watched it, others may not have. But overall, we had a laugh.
Yeah.
Which is the main thing.
It was like a comedy sketch show aimed at teenagers. So we had all sorts of different, like, fun, cool kind of sketches. And so it was nice. It was a bit different to what CBBC used to, what they kind of have on their channel. And so I think that was, like, the nice kind of spark we were for the channel to kind of bring in a new kind of age of new content.
And not just, you know, when you hear about people asking for diversity quotas and stuff, I think part of the fact that because we wrote our own show, we were dealing with different subject matter, speaking in a different way. Mm. And, you know, and I still get people come up to us now and say that they watched it and liked it, you know. So obviously, for those people, it was a significant show. And that's all that I think that's the biggest compliment we could get.
It was nice because, like, we both used to kind of work in schools. And so we kind of took our humour and kind of the subject matters from the kids we'd interact with at school and stuff like that, and used our own imaginations as well as their kind of cool ideas to kind of craft something that
okay,
could
cool.
kind of relate to. So
so when you say you both worked in schools, like, in what capacity was that?
I was a TA, not Territorial Army, just a teaching assistant.
I used to crawl in Steven Seagal style.
No, I'm dead.
Exactly.
Nice to see you again, Captain Billy. I can't go back.
I was a teaching assistant and worked with you know, kids in a special needs school, and then ended up working with some other kids who like been referred to prudes, basically kids that weren't succeeding in a mainstream school setting.
And I was a secondary drama school teacher, so I kind of did like a PGCE, trained to kind of be a teacher, and then worked in a few schools, but I was also kind of doing stand-up comedy at the same time, and that's kind of where I met Johnny on the stand-up comedy circuit.
Okay, yeah, talk us through how you got together. This is surely an interesting story then, right?
Well, it is, because it speaks speaks of the man, really.
There's many versions of this story that he's about to tell.
Well, there's one that's certainly going straight down the listener's ears right now. So we'd already met on the circuit. I was, I guess, a little bit, well, I was a newer act than INL. He'd been going for, say, a year or so longer than me. And a couple of years in, I thought, right, I want to go to Edinburgh, the Edinburgh Comedy Festival. Everyone kind of knows in comedy it's a bit of a proving ground and somewhere that people think that they're going to be serious about comedy have to go, really. So I knew I wasn't ready to be taking up an hour show or anything like that. But I thought what would be a good idea is to share an hour, go with someone else, you know. And I wanted to go with another act who was actually decent, because I've seen these disaster shows.
The first time he told this story, I didn't say any of that. So. Just pointing out that he's just added in a little bit of salt, you know, just spicing it up a bit. You know?
Everyone's allowed their tax, I believe, yeah?
Yeah.
Add that VAT, baby.
I've seasoned this.
You're seasoning that joke?
20%, yeah?
That compliment will only egg up the betrayal that I have ultimately. So I was like, I know, would you reckon about doing a Edinburgh show together, share half an hour? And I now was like, yeah, let me go and see if I can find anyone else that I can do it first, you know.
Right there, the listeners can't believe that. It's like, as if I went up to him and said, you know, let me find someone else, Phil.
Didn't say it to me.
Let me check for a couple more people first.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to see a few options. Yeah. I'm just going to check out some things. Yeah. A couple of weeks later, he's like, yeah, go on then, mate. Let's do it. Couldn't find anyone else, and suddenly I was in. So, you know, and I said he was a good act, and that's how he treated me.
Wow.
So basically, when we went up...
Mark's looking at me different now. Look, see, look, is it?
Don't believe everything you hear, bruh.
Dummy dirty.
You can do your side afterwards. You can get both sides of this. Take it to trial.
So,
with
Judge.
Captain Billy.
Judge, I had a lot on my mind, you know, like Marcus. It was a tough time, and like summer was, like money was tight, and like people's was just like.
Objection.
We do. Bailiff's knocking on the door. Now, like.
But I think the fact that we've ended up working together for like a number of years now, it's kind of a bit more. I think it's quite special the way you kind of get together and stuff. Yeah. So basically, it kind of speaks to the level of organisation myself and I now get. We didn't have any Edinburgh previews for this show that we were now booked into. Mm. No Edinburgh previews, apart from one, which was the day before we were leaving to go up to Edinburgh. So when we turned up at our preview, neither of us actually knew what the other one was going to do. Yeah. So we both showed up.
No idea.
So basically... one of the people organising this preview, they were like, right, who's on first? And I thought I was going on first. I now thought he was going on first. So
we both went out.
We both walked out there. And then there's just one mic stand. But luckily, and this is what I mean about the chance thing, there was two stalls on the stage. Someone had put a stall to the side of the stage and there was another one with like the mic. So I was like, all right, you can go first, but I'm sitting here, which had a mic set up as well. So when Arnell was doing his crowd work, I was jumping in and saying little things, and it was going well.
Interacting.
And then by the end, when I went on, Arnell did the same thing, and it was working. So we were like, should we just do some together? Which, to be honest, at that stage of stand-up comedy, you're very selfish for time. You want to showcase yourself. So it was a big step for us to be like in our first Edinburgh hour together.
Yeah, we basically cut like 10 minutes off each other's sets to kind of interact with each other and the audience together. And as Johnny says, it's quite rare because like everyone's going up for a full hour on their own.
Mm.
We're going up for half hour each, and then we're also splitting that time to kind of do stuff together that's kind of unplanned, but interacting with the audience. And so it's like, it paid off in a random kind of way. It like people really liked it. the feedback we got after that, like, single preview, everyone was like, oh, do you do that stuff on stage together often? Because we were loving it, you know? I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
They're loving it, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah, then we got a TV show out of it, basically. So, cheers.
There's like a massive gap there, but yeah, that's pretty much how it works.
Yeah,
out.
But
like,
essentially, the person who left that stool on the stage.
Yeah.
You've done us a solid one.
Yeah.
So there you
started
go.
Us off.
Did you go back and find that stool either and try and investigate? Because that would make a very nice origin story.
No.
I haven't even been back to that venue.
Yeah, no, we haven't.
Does it still exist?
It's in Balham.
Oh, how people change.
I know.
As soon as the deal comes through, you're like, I don't even remember the name of the place. Somewhere in Balham.
Don't even have an Oyster card.
Our heads have been turned. I don't sit on stalls anymore.
So is it pretty much you wowed somebody at the Edinburgh Fest or and then they happened to work for CBBC, or was it... What was the actual process? You know, was there some there were some conversations. You didn't just turn up and say, we're here to do the TV show.
No, we had.
That would have been great as well. That'd been wicked.
I mean, that would have been a magical story, but it didn't quite happen like that. There was a producer that we knew who worked in TV, who also worked along with another producer for, I think it was Princess Productions, wasn't it? And they invited themselves along to our show. And they saw what we were doing. And the crazy thing is, because of how we were set up, we did our show started with me and Johnny doing something 10 minutes at the top to the audience. And then the next 20 minutes is me followed by Johnny. They were only there for the beginning bit and then my bit. And then they left right after that before Johnny can get on. And so Johnny was a bit miffed.
I'm walking around going, you've blown it for me, mate. You've ruined it, eh? I didn't even get a chance to shine. Oh, this show's done now. Can't be bothered. Go on, here you go, guys. Just waste of time. And then I remember getting a call later that evening from them. And I was like, oh, maybe you didn't mess it up.
So, maybe you did a good job.
Yeah. But then Arnel, did it switch around for you? Were you instead saying,
well,
hey,
there you go.
I made us.
Good thing I picked you.
That's why I had to ask around first. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, we're quite lucky. We worked with them on a few ideas. Initially, we were kind of go pitch something for adults in terms of in the comedy realm, much how I guess every other stand-up does. But there was something quite special about the way myself and Johnny kind of worked, and the fact that we both had that history of working in schools as well. It felt like a good fit to kind of try and aim something at the teenage market rather than just the older market that we're known for doing in stand-up. And so that's kind of the beginnings of how it first spawned, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think it felt natural because we'd worked with kids, like you say, but also if you look at the history of successful double acts in this country, many of them, if not all of them, have started in kids' TV. You get maybe a little bit extra leeway in terms of time of learning your craft and stuff. Mm. If you come out on adult TV and manage to get a break, you better hit the ground running. Yep. Or
because people got a lot of things to say.
Yeah. it's over really quickly. You've got to be banging at that level straight away. So,
and you already know by how vocal everybody is on social media anyway. Mm. Like stuff like Twitter and stuff like that. As soon as the show goes out, like people are live tweeting already whether this is the sort of show that they're into or not. If they just happen to scroll on it and they see something they don't like, it's already going online. And so that was the kind of cool thing about starting in kids' TV. They were too young for that.
You're not even old enough to be on Twitter. You don't count.
Yeah. We don't count them tweets.
We were getting tweets.
We were getting some tweets from a few... I want to say parents, because otherwise, why are they watching?
Exactly. We've got some haters and lovers.
You got to laugh, though, at it. You got to laugh. So there must be some golden tweets.
There was
that
one guy that was watching
directions.
Every week, and he was criticising it every week, but he's still tuned in.
Yeah, he was like, like, there was one guy who set up his Twitter account just so he could tweet about us and say how much he hated the show.
It was the only tweets on his thing.
That's how you know your show's doing well.
Yeah.
That is great. He's created a profile, and he is locking in live.
Exactly.
No, I play a business.
We have generated movement in his life, and that's what we want. But no, I mean, look, the thing is let's go sincere. No, I think one of the things that we found as well is I actually think it's a good example of how racism works in this country as well.
Mm.
See, because we were coming out, as the first black double act. They're saying, don't get me wrong, CBBC are very good for having diverse talent on their station. They've got loads of different black and multi-ethnic presenters on there. But we knew that we were doing something different when we rolled out. We were two black guys fronting a show and speaking in a way. And I say speaking in a way, we were being us. And we were referring to aspects of life that not only we had grown up in, we'd also observed from the schools that we were working in.
Yeah.
For instance, the sketch show character I come up with, which is a superhero character called Waste Man. So his power had, he had the power of rubbish, basically, which is rubbish. And his sidekick, Bear Man, who essentially used to just shit teddy bears. That was it. And the villain was Omar Days as well. So it was making a kind of
it was like a play on words, like we used with kind of a lot of the slang that kids were kind of using in the schools that we were working in. And so, on one hand, you're getting the visuals for the younger ones that they're seeing, oh, it's like a superhero, he's a rabid superhero, he's got a sidekick dressed up as a bear. But on the other hand, you've got your older teenagers watching it and they're hearing a totally different storyline going on purely because of the words that we're using and the slang that we're talking. And so, like, there's almost like two different kind of sketches going on at the same time.
Exactly.
Cool. It's not like you're going full road, man. Just by tweaking a couple of words that you know are relevant, you still get the mass appeal of the UK, but you manage to connect in a way that, I'm going to be honest, I don't think any other comedy show on CBBC has, because adults making something funny that don't know what kids like is very different to you guys, because you were in you were in the field.
Yeah.
You were in. I was there, man.
You
were there.
You're completely right. And I think that, there's a lot of shows that aim to work on two levels where the kids will watch it and laugh, and the parents know what they're laughing at. Mm. And then there's other things that the parents will laugh at and go, oh, you're not old enough, son. But what we actually did was we made a show that worked on three levels, because we had bits that that the adults would know and the kids would know and the kids might laugh. There were bits that just the adults knew and would laugh, but there were also bits that just the kids knew, because a lot of these parents didn't know what Waste Man stuff was. So the kids are laughing. They're like, what is going on? Mm. So we were getting tweets every day like, oh my God, is there seriously a guy called Waste Man on CBBC? You are freaking out. Like, in all the cities, Birmingham, London, they're like, what is this Waste Man on CBBC? You know, but the reason why I brought this up in the first place was because there was one guy who sent out a tweet, which was simply was, what is this damn show? Why is it teaching our kids to talk black? Right? And that was literally what it was, to talk black. So we were coming out there and we're like, what is going on? What are you talking about? We're not. First of all, we're not teaching anyone to talk black. Second of all, what is talking black anyway? You know, please break this down for me. I missed that class. But in general, you know, if you look at the response to, say, Ant and Dec, was there tweets going in saying, why are these people teaching our kids to talk Geordie? You know, no one's saying that.
Mm.
It's because there are certain areas with very low, maybe, you know, exposure to ethnic minorities or a different culture, and they don't like it. So I'm pleased we opened some doors. Well,
they were very vocal towards us. No, but it was important. It was an important part for like myself and Johnny, and in the way we kind of wrote the show. It was a thing where, like, the number one thing, like we always said, was we don't want to talk down to the kids. Don't want to talk down to the kids, because like as Johnny was saying, Johnny was working with kids, I was working with kids, and the kids we both were working with, you couldn't talk down to them. You have to talk to them as an adult. And so it was a thing where you have to kind of talk to people in different kind of ways, so everybody would get something out of the show. And so that's kind of how we kind of crafted it, as Johnny explained. Yeah.
And what are kids like in school nowadays, or when you guys were in school? What were they like? What's the difference between kids, how you were when you were kids compared to kids nowadays?
Well, first off, they got the social media, man. We never had that. The only internet we had was like when we go to the IT room at lunch, and that's about it. And if you had two computers that you could share, two internet-enabled computers, that was it. The rest are on the intranet.
Intranet, okay.
The intranet. Oh, you remember the intranet? Yeah. That was just the school's network. That's it.
With all the boring stuff.
You can look at school stuff. Yeah. That's it. You can see what's happening at lunchtime. That's about it.
jumping on in Carter.
Yeah.
Listen, can you school the listener, please? We've mentioned in Carter once on the show, but I believe it needs another honourable mention.
Well, people don't know about Microsoft and Carter.
Yeah,
Get some people didn't even know it was Microsoft.
It was the original Wikipedia.
Way before Google. Yeah. You know, when you wanted to check something up, you may go on Encarta and find out different facts and
stuff.
You
needed a CD-ROM for it.
You needed a CD-ROM, but also, this was way before. Like, everyone walks around with iPods and stuff, got music.
Yeah.
It had a few tunes on Encarta. Yeah, so when I wanted to listen to
it, when you go to like an artist or something, it would have an example of one of their tunes.
I was listening to David Bowie Changes just because it felt really cool. It's like, yeah, there's music. And the only other one I had, the only hip hop one I had, was Grandmaster Flash, The Message.
Nice.
So I just listened to David Bowie Changes, and then straight onto Grandmaster Flash. Like, yeah, let's go.
I did not know about those cheat codes.
Hey, if you were lucky enough to have it, your homework was always on point. Anyway, you could tell who had Microsoft Encarta because their homework was always looking sick.
And all the same.
Same results. Looking
very similar. So yeah, they've got social media nowadays. Like, what about the attitude of kids? Like, is it less of a thing where you're the teacher talking down to them, or are you talking to the kids like on their level the same way that you kind of aimed your comedy? How was it?
I don't think they, in their own minds, they don't suffer fools anymore. Like, they don't want to be patronised, and in general, if they think someone's talking rubbish, they'll tell you about it. Like, I don't know if I'd say that kids are less respectful, but they are less...
They're more aware that there's something else at play, I think. And I think that's kind of down to the internet being accessible for everybody who has a phone. Like, everybody who's got a phone now, they're able to kind of access the internet at any point. Whereas before, that was never a thing. You had to go to the library if you wanted to learn something new, or go to school and listen properly. That was it.
I just think the kids are also aware of their rights as well. They show less deference to like older people. You know, it used to be like, we had like some of our teachers were just madmen. you know, you just didn't know what was going on. Like, one guy, Mr. Ball, used to roll around with a stick, like a broom handle, without the actual broom bit on the bottom, right? And then he'd walk around kind of hanging his shoulders on it, right? And then if someone started talking, this guy would slam the broomstick onto the table so loud that it was literally like a flashbang had gone off. And everyone was like, he's like, I've now got your attention. You know,
this guy's like, he's from Taken, man. Exactly. It's like Liam Neeson.
Mate, you didn't mess around anymore. It's like, okay, yeah, you got my attention. Back in the room.
That is very scary. You but don't want to get somewhat effective. From him, yeah. Cool. So you've applied kind of that knowledge of kids into your comedy, right? Now, there's loads of like sketches that are really funny. Actually, before we get onto the sketches, what was it like as a new duo trying to push past some of these ideas where adults don't understand the words? Because adults run the BBC, right? Yeah. So you're two new acts having conversations with people that are long in the tooth. They've been there for a while and you've got ideas that have never been heard before. How the hell did you get those on air?
It was a battle, to be fair, for most of it. I think what they did, what was happening is with the sketches we were writing, they didn't quite understand why they were funny. And so they'd let us get away with a lot more because they couldn't really understand it. Because I guess because like we had a sketch track called The Johnny Kyle Show, where Johnny plays Jeremy Kyle. And all the guests on the show are all fairy tale characters. So it would be like Red Riding Hood, Pinocchio, and then it'd be almost like the show for the adults, as he was kind of saying, from how it's on different layers. For the adults, they'd get it because it's they know the Johnny Kyle, they know the Jeremy Kyle show. The kids will get it because they recognize the fairy tale characters, and the teenagers will get it for the issues that were going on. And so it would be like, for example, Pinocchio would be on, and he'd have to take a lie detector test to see if he's been stealing from Geppetto, and you get stuff like that, or Red Riding Hood, she has to take, she wants her grandma to come on the show, take a DNA test, see if he's actually the big bad wolf, or if it's actually a real grandma, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so it's like there'd be like humor on different layers for different people, depending on who you were. And so I guess in terms of how we kind of tackled it. It was always a thing where we always had to kind of be mindful of who we're speaking to and how they're going to respond to it.
Do you know what? I'll go a step further on this, and I'll just say, I think that when we first got our first series commissioned, the thing is, once your show's commissioned, it's commissioned. So they're kind of like, yeah, we don't want it to be a disaster, but if it's a disaster, you're done. You'd see you later, guys, out of here. Like, it's over, you know what I mean? We gave you a shot. And this is actually how I think that certainly the big channels and organisations tackle diversity, and I think that's one of the big issues, because they give black people or Asian people a shot. They don't really support them. They set up people to fail and then say, look, we gave you a shot,
yeah,
and you don't succeed. So when we went out there, they were probably thinking this is going to be, some of them are probably like, this is going to be a bit of a disaster, but feels, you know, maybe it feels a quota, or I don't know, or certainly it's, you could see why we commissioned it, but it's up to them at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And when it went on to be as successful as it was, I think people within the organisation started taking attention and being like, why are they laughing? Do you know what's happening?
Hang on.
What exactly what's are going they finding on
here?
Funny?
Yeah, we're going to have to look behind the curtain here.
Yeah.
So, and at that point, like,
things started to try and get changed.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
So, was
yeah.
it, just so you know, like, listening now, so the conversation, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, was it like, this looks really good, how about we just add a little bit to it? And we just tweak it to
every
that
other day we were hearing stuff.
Really?
Like that.
Yeah. And there was a lot of, oh, right. See this bit? Here's the funny bit. Should we take that bit out and then put in something that's not actually funny and then go with it? And then we're like, yeah, but that's not funny.
That's the whole point of the, yeah. the sketch, isn't it?
So after the first season did really well, that must have given you some real, like, balls then to come in and say, well, this works now, so can we, like, you know,
kind
have
of
confidence.
But they wanted to get more involved in it as
okay, right,
they wanted to kind of get have a closer eye on what was going on, and they also wanted us to have writers as well, or to come join and write stuff for us rather than us write the whole show ourselves.
And what did you say to that, guys?
No, to be fair we had writers on the show anyway, because it's like we had so many sketches to fill that we wrote, say, 20% of every episode, but there were individual sketches. 20? Did I say 20%?
You said 20. How much are you getting paid?
We wrote 80% of every episode. Sorry, but we would have like 20% that would be volunteered by other writers who might write for a sketch or whatever, because we had a lot to write otherwise. So it's not that we couldn't have taken other people's writing and worked with it, because we could do that as well as write our own stuff, but some of the things that were being suggested were way out of whack.
Oh, go on, give us an example. No, you don't have to name any names, do you?
We don't have to name the names, but there's a sketch that me and Johnny both know.
Just real low level stuff, real low level. It was like,
I might find it funny if it's bad enough, so go on, tell me.
Oh, I don't even know.
I love terrible jokes, go on.
Can we even say it?
I think we probably get, basically, there was one sketch which was, the characters were called Spamhead and Nitwit. And I couldn't tell you everything about what happened in the sketch, but it was just like, I mean, seriously, have you seen what we've done in our first series and you want us to do this? What is going on here?
Scandalous. It was scandalous. I remember our faces and we both saw it. It's like, is this serious submissions? It is a serious submission.
You weren't like, emailing back, Carl, well, good one, guys. You got us. Yeah,
this
yeah.
This come from some big writers, like these established writers. They've been writing for a long time.
It's really?
Like, this, what, they said, what did you send them as a brief?
But the thing is when you think about it, like this, one of the things that may be troubling is if you look at the way that writing for a show like that would work, they have a show, they say, these are the two guys fronting it, make some sketches for them. If that's what comes to your mind when you think about us and what we do, then you haven't got us at all. Now luckily we wrote, if we didn't get sketches, we wrote all of our sketches anyway. It was not an issue because that's what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
But there are some people who don't necessarily have as much writing talent and
or a creative control, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they're more going to be susceptible to whatever they're written.
Yeah.
You know, and so these people can tank quickly, because if that's what's getting served up for you, I'm not saying that's just necessarily just, you know, a race thing or anything. That can be for anyone in the industry. If you don't get creative control, you are a slave to whatever you're given, basically.
So with your writing process, how did you make, how do you write together? Because, you know, it's two different minds, two different slight, I would say different styles, because you do two different people.
Well,
how do you work it out? How do you go from idea to screen?
We used to get into a room together and we used to just bust jokes for hours, and we'd either have like another producer in the room writing notes, or we'd be taking notes as we're just busting jokes, and we'd come in with different ideas that we'd thought about,
that we'd want to test, and then we'd just play it out to each other. We'd play it out, we'd banter on it, we'd see if we can riff off of it, see if anything comes from it. If nothing comes from it, throw it away. If something does come, oh yeah, that's nice, let's, keep that down, keep that down. And we'd keep laughing and joking and bantering until we'd have like a skeleton frame, and then we'd kind of go off and we'd write over it, and then we'd do that process again. We'd bring it back in, first draft, let's see how it goes again. We'd start battering off it, see how it works. And that was kind of the whole process from like the initial first season, I guess.
I think that we basically would, there were bits that we would write individually just take away and just do on our own. And then there were bits where we would collabo. And then there were other bits where I might write something and then send it over for Ionel to have a pass at, just to see if he could add any extra bits. And then vice versa, he'd write something and send it over. So I don't think there was any one set formula. It was more about just making sure that we both felt that we were getting our stuff across. Like, the way our show was structured, we basically had a theme for each show, and the idea that it was kind of like a lot of the stuff was almost off camera. So the show was going out and we were there fronting it, but a lot of the time we were trying to get out of there. We wanted a Radio 1 show, you know, so we would be like...
It was a cynical take on a kid's show.
Yeah, we were just constantly trying to get out and improve our stock within the BBC. So it was things about, particularly my character. my character was, you know, very kind of egotistical and ambitious, and... You know, when you basically are trying, your narrative for your show bit is like, we need to get out of here, mate. We're much better than this. I've got so many fans and stuff. And then at the end, obviously, it all comes crashing down. And then you're back going, kids, we love you guys. You know, and it's that cynical thing. Because I think kids really get that. They, at the end of the day, everyone tries to sell things to kids all the time. And they're not always just like, you know, naive to it. They understand that there are some people who are self-serving out there, shall we say.
Yeah, I guess it was a case of breaking down that fourth wall where we're just letting you know that this is what we're about.
Yeah, exactly.
As soon as the big opportunity comes, we're out of here, you know.
We're out of here.
Exactly. But for now... Yeah, this is cool.
You're good.
Yeah.
You had plenty of gold as well. You had some great sketches on there. I mean, I know one that still does the rounds on social media is the schoolroom sketch, of all sketches, shall we say, the trombone version as well. Like, I presume that came from you guys, right?
Originally that whole sketch was from INL's, like, not necessarily that one, but in general, the whole teacher and...
It was from my time from teaching.
Yeah.
And kind of loosely based it off, like, personalities in the classroom. And then it kind of spawned from there. Because I remember we did like a taster tape first. Before we kind of got the show, we did like a taster, so I guess the execs could see what kind of tone we're kind of going for. And we shot it quite cheaply. And one of the sketches was this sketch that we was going to film. And the premise was Johnny was going to play the teacher and I was going to be all the kids in the classroom. And to differentiate from the different kids, I just needed to have like an item of clothing to show I'm someone else, like glasses or something like that. And it just happened, it was just a wig in the room. And so I used that to kind of play the character of Blondie. It was just a blonde wig that they found. And from there on, that the character was kind of... born, I guess.
Yeah.
Spawned from there.
Yeah. So, what, have you got favourite sketches that you guys take away, or some sketches that were fun to do when you're putting together that you had a real laugh on?
I think the ones that people liked, I think we liked, but there are other ones where they became funnier for filming. There was a computer game sketches, which... we both wrote in the first series and then I wrote in the second series. And there was a sketch that I'd written about how, like, because these guys are devout gamers. All they ever do is game all the time, you know, and do reviews like a YouTuber would. And basically, for one episode, my character has got an avatar that he's been building up. He's spent 3 months grinding, you know, and I'm sure people who play games know. It does get, it's a grind, it's a job, you know, and he's ground and ground until finally he's got his character where he wants. And in the sketch, you can take on battle duels, and basically you can either have a safety duel where nothing happens, you just, you know, you do it for fun, or for keeps duel.
Well, you risk everything.
Where, yeah, your character dies. And basically, it's that classic thing of, look, if I press this button, it becomes a real duel. Imagine I press that button, my INL knocks me, I've pressed it, and then I'm fighting for my life.
Oh.
He dies, and then basically, I'm...
freaks out.
I'm absolutely distraught, my character. And basically, the reason why I mention this is because at the end of this sketch, so basically I'm distraught and I'd send him out the room and the camera just kept rolling and
nobody said cut.
There's at least 10 to 15 minutes of INL, I'm on the bed just crying and INL just keeps coming back as his character going, your mum said, do you want some dinner? And I'm like, guess out! And then he comes back in again going, do you want to go with a pot? Get out! And he just goes on and on and on.
Nobody called cut, so he kept coming back in, just getting on his nerves. But it's one of those things, I guess as a gamer, you don't want to lose your profile. People get so angry about it.
Could you imagine?
Big! People get so angry about it. And so it was one of those things. I remember that day as well, filming. That was a fun day.
How about yourself? You say that's the same one?
No, I think one of mine would have to be, we did a sketch strand called Bag It. Where it's two boys that work at a supermarket checkout, and their morals are everything to them, and so basically they're serving, they're really good at their job, but when it comes to someone that is doing something morally that they don't agree with, they shut it down straight away. So for example, there's a lady that comes in, she's only got 3 items, but she's asking for a plastic bag. What? You want a plastic bag, bruv? Can't you hold that? What's the matter? What? It's bad for the environment, you know, it ain't biodegradable, you know, what's going on? And so like they'd shut it down like that. And so it was fun to kind of play those characters because we were there all day and we just have different customers come in. Because we had different sketches that we wrote, but they were literally just different customers and who they'd interact with. And it was just fun to just have a conveyor belt of different people coming in and then we just shut
mug them off.
Yeah, we just mug them off. It's like, hey, Rev, what's getting on? Like, hey, 2-for-1 nappies, you know, you can get a deal with that.
Yeah, that was good, actually. I like that.
Yeah, man.
Those characters were fun to play. I love those ones.
Yeah, man, I think it's great. I mean, the only real difference I think between children's comedy and like adult comedy is that on CBBC really you can't swear, can't smoke and drink. But other than that, it's still the essence of comedy is still there, right? You've still got to focus in the same way. So in the future, like an adult show, would that be something you'd like to do?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, you've got our numbers, guys. Okay. Got numbers. That's, to be honest, I wouldn't take what we've done with Johnny and INL back at all. It was fantastic. But ultimately, it was always our, you know, dream to be doing adult TV anyway. It was something...
Adult TV?
To do... Wait. Oh, no,
that is a good... That's Billy just perked up. I just want to say...
Billy's like, that's a big leap.
Billy was like, I'm alive.
He's no longer dead, yeah.
Headphones aren't dead.
What's that, Bill?
The Johnny on L station.
You've got to have X in there somewhere, haven't you? Yeah, maybe not that kind of thing.
Calm down, Bill.
Yeah, operating a babe station style policy, doing sketches and then having people to call up so they can hear it.
Those are long shifts as well, just the two of you running that station.
We'd love to do, I guess, especially as a sketch show for adults as well, but I guess the sketch shows are very expensive to kind of make, and I think that's one of the things, and I think that's why we were quite fortunate in terms of getting a space to work on CBBC for so long, was we got to explore those avenues and we got to explore our ideas and kind of, not a safe space, but like in a space where we had time to kind of grow and learn from the mistakes. Because as Johnny was saying before, sometimes when you get pushed out into the limelight, you got that one chance. And if you mess up, that's it. It's game over. You don't see that person again. You see him in Sainsbury's maybe, but that's about it. It's like...
Okay.
Probably that's too expensive, Sainsbury's.
Maybe Morrison's.
Little. Nieto.
Oh, gosh.
Maybe Nieto.
Took
yeah.
you
oh,
there.
Yeah.
Oh, so,
just a bunch of people in that supermarket who blew their shot.
You're right, lads.
You had your chance.
Yeah. You getting the Swedish plum tomatoes as well, are you?
Yeah. It's a long way down, isn't it?
But I think, you know, the main thing I think we learned from working on CBBC is, especially in this industry, it's more about longevity and consistency.
And I never realised how important it was until actually kind of being in TV and learning that. Because you think, oh, you get once you're big, or you once you appear on one big show, your followers go up, that's it, you're made for, that's it, your life is sorted. And it doesn't really work like that. I guess it's good that we kind of learned that quite early on, that it's more about consistency, it's more about performance, it's more about how long you can keep a hold in this game for, rather than just being there for like 5 minutes.
I couldn't agree more with that. That is certainly a lesson we've both learned. The kind of idea I had of this game before I started in it was such a naive one. I literally used to think that, yeah, I'll get on, do well, and because I'm good, I'll just keep going and there'll just constantly be work. Absolutely not the case. I remember speaking to Doc Brown, like he was doing the 4 o'clock club as well, and so we've become friends via that as well and through comedy. And he was saying that he still gets people, like kids coming up to him, being like, you know, what are you doing around here? He's like, I live around here. And they're like, brother, you're on TV, like, what? Why would you live around here, kind of thing? He's like, I don't know where they think we all live, like, you know what I mean? Just all living in Mayfair? No, that ain't how it goes down, you know? And I've had similar experiences as well. People can't believe that I would be there, like, around East London. I'm like, do you know how much it costs to live around East London? Trust me.
I was going to ask you for some money, exactly. You know?
Shake you down.
Bro, how much you got? Let me hold it.
Yeah. How often were you, like, compared to others? Because I feel like that's what the industry does. What kind of comparisons did you get? Apart from Radzi from Blue Peter, obviously.
Well, no.
Radzi,
actually, he was a runner when we first came out. So we know Radzi quite well. He's a really nice guy. And he was a runner at that point. And I remember we were coming in to do promo, and he was there because he had similar hair to me and stuff. And he was like, oh, I want to do presenting and whatnot. And we got on well, and he was saying, this is a real kind of landmark moment. He was like, between your show, and there was another show that there was on at the time, fronted by Michelle Ackley, who does the one show now, and some other guy, another black guy. And he was like, this is the first time ever they've had two back-to-back shows with both black presenters, like, and he made a big deal of it at the time. And then a little while later, he ended up doing Blue Peter, and he's, you know,
I did not know he was a runner.
Yeah. He worked his way up, man.
We used with Ori Aduba as well when we was going on Match of the Day Kickabout in the first year, and they're all around.
He was on Newsround as well, wasn't he?
So officially, you set the big hair trend for males out.
100%. I'll call Radzi out right now. I'll call him out. You know, he's been biting my style for long enough.
Man had braids when he first met him.
We put it on our Virgin Radio show, didn't we? I called him out. I called Radzi out. If he wanted to say anything, he knew I had the hair first. So I've set that trend.
You're claiming it, yeah.
But no, I mean, obviously, first black UK double act as well, because one of the obvious ones were on kids' TV. Two black guys front of show, Keenan and Kel.
Yeah.
You know, and in our show, I now had a bit of an obsession with ginger beer as well. That was
still a
real plot point. And I thought, you know, let's not be compared to Keenan and Kel. We wouldn't be as crass as making whole storylines based around one character's obsession with a soft drink, orange soda. So we went down that road.
To be fair, we were getting those cans before we got the show.
Yeah, we were.
There you go. So you were just keeping it real.
And we were keeping it real.
Yeah.
Ginger beer, man.
What's the
old Jamaica?
So what's the future plans for you guys then? Like, what do you want to be like? When I next sit down with you, what do you want to have in the can, or what do you want to have in the works?
Ooh, that's
solo
nice.
Work, duo work,
we both have like solo careers, and we both have careers together. We're fortunate enough to kind of be still working together and doing a bunch of sketches together and stuff. I'm not sure if we could kind of talk about that.
Yeah,
too
we're
much.
Fire it up. We're doing some sketches on a new show on Sky One, or around Sky anyway. I don't know which exact one it is, which we're filming next week. Or something like that.
Better not be next week.
Yeah. I may have my dates wrong.
Isn't it shit, come next week.
Yeah. So, and that's for a kid's show.
Sick.
So, you know, that it's good to be back working up sketches and showcasing what we can do. We're on Virgin Radio for a year, and I've done other radio as well. So, you know, that option's always still open to go back into radio. It's something I really enjoy.
Mm. You enjoy radio?
I know you started radio as well, don't
you? Yeah, yeah. I really enjoyed live broadcast. It's quite interesting, though. We like to lean into tech on How to Kill an Hour. What's your take on kind of the change in radio and music that's happening? You know, you've got the likes of like podcasts like this, yeah. FUBAR radios and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Only online stuff. What's your take on that now with radio?
I swear, sir. I think that's definitely the direction in which it's going.
We started on FUBAR.
Yeah, yeah, we started on FUBAR radio.
Yeah,
well.
We used to have a show. A mad show as well.
I think online it's there's less restrictions, obviously. Yeah. And so especially podcasts and stuff like that, they can really blow up. Whereas radio is always a thing where you have to kind of listen it live at the moment, and that's less of that is happening nowadays, especially with TV, all sorts of forms of media. Like nobody's kind of tuning in at that specific time unless it's football or something like that. This is a big event. You're going to catch up on a catch up service, or you're going to on a streaming service. And I think that's kind of what's happening with radio a lot, is people would prefer to kind of listen in their time rather than be dictated at the time they have to kind of listen to things.
Yeah, it's on demand these days, isn't it? You know, and ultimately, it's like the podcast says, it's how you're killing an hour at the end of the day. And if you've got a spare hour to spare, then you can do it at that point. But that doesn't mean you've got an hour any time of the day.
Mm.
So I definitely think it's the way forward. I think you see a lot of people launching themselves in, you know, that kind of new media and gaining a real good traction and a bit of following. With our FUBAR show, we didn't... I mean, the way that we grew an audience so quickly, and you got people returning, like, they're like, they think they're your best mates. Like, I'm not saying we didn't know them, you know what I mean? But it felt like a family kind of thing. And that is what I think the kind of podcast format allows you to do.
You're literally getting emails coming through. It's like, I've just caught up on the last 20 episodes you did online. All right, and now I'm able to listen to it live when it's happening. And it's like, rah. It's like, that is the magic of podcasts, is people can listen in their own time. Some people listen when they're going to sleep. Mm-hmm. And it's like some people just have it on in the background in the house, and just so it feels like there's someone there and it's something to listen to while they're doing work. Mm-hmm. Other people on the commute on the way to work, other people at work. And it's like the fact that you can listen at any point whenever you want, pause it whenever you need to.
Mm.
I guess radio, you just can't get that. And so,
yeah. How would you describe your FUBAR show? You said it was pretty off the rails.
I think they can still check it out as well at somewhere.
You can
find it. But basically, it was off the rails. We would come in and we would discuss like recent news topics, you know, try and put our own spin on those things. But after that, there were a few different features we'd run. And one of the features that where it would always kick off was our Agony Uncle section. Now, I cannot believe some of the stuff that goes on out there in the real world. Like, I'm naive. I mean, we had people giving us their dating stories, dating disasters. Like,
oh, some mad ones, man.
Some were absolute craziness. There's a couple that jump out to mind. One, so it was like, oh, I went on a first date with a guy last week and it had gone well. Like, we were sitting down having a drink. It had gone well and I thought, you know, I'm going to go head home with him. And he's like, okay, I'll just settle up. So he went over to the bar to pay the bill. But then at that point, she realised he was on Heelys. And he did a Heely over to the bar. And she's like, oh no, I've said yes. Yeah. And now he's in Heelys.
It all depends on how cool he did it. But still, it's like...
If he managed to do like a reverse Heely, which is the hardest ever move in a game, to move backwards on Heelys, then I'd be like, you know what? Swag.
Yeah. You still got to answer questions of why you're a grown man in Heelys, but at least you can say I've mastered it.
Throughout the night, it's going to be a little when you're holding the drinks out.
Did he keep the Heelys on, though? Oh, did she go home with him?
I think she did. She was just like, I felt absolutely obliged to.
It jumped on his back, innit?
Yeah, exactly. As he's Heelying all the way home. But I don't think... I think she went back, but then, you know.
What's worse, being a Heely wearer or sleeping with somebody that has just worn Heelys recently?
I think sleeping with them, you know.
Yeah.
Because you have to answer to your friends as well.
You can make a choice.
When they see him in the Heelys, you just have to vouch.
So like, if you bump into them in public, somebody wheels up. Hey,
could never meet on a hill as well. Like, it's a dastardly world of people wearing heelys as a grown person. It's
I didn't even know they existed in adult sizes.
Neither did I.
You haven't got them in special shops,
especially
you know?
Mate.
What if you custom made him? Yeah, oh no,
yeah,
that's weird.
Custom.
Oh, that's yeah, that's yeah. The dodgy. Oh,
that's, so, like, that's how you know you wanted to impress on a date, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Got the customs out.
Oh, so you think he wheeled into the profile mirror that he has and went, yes.
Yeah, this is it.
And wheeled off.
Yeah, I'll be honest, if I turned up at someone's house and they were over a workbench working on something, as I got closer, I realised that they had their trainers upturned and they were installing a wheel into it. That would probably scare me more than if they were working on like an axe or something like that. I mean, I don't understand. And then all the doors slam and go, I can't let you out of here.
Like, you've seen too much.
Exactly.
Why didn't you just call ahead?
And you know, as you're trying to get the door, he's just healing in the way.
Come back.
So that's a taste of the show there. Okay, yeah. All right, that's pretty much
what all the episodes are like, man.
Oh, we.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I've not asked you how you like to kill some time. I will do in just a sec, though.
Yeah, no worries.
I know.
Yeah.
Kinetic comedy. Talk to me.
Boom. Yeah, kinetic comedy. It's created that about 8 years ago now. It was kind of a frustration of being on the stand-up circuit. Like, what would happen is we'd always turn up to like most of the gigs in like London and the surrounding areas, they're all like in upstairs of pubs and function rooms. And personally, I guess as a black guy, I've never really felt comfortable just wandering into a pub, just just full of people and just like, yeah, I've come to entertain you. It's always been a bit, it's always like, didn't sit well with me.
What, because you're black? What's that got to do with being black?
Because it would always be in like working man's pubs, labour pubs, where the majority of people would just be white, and then I'm walking in there going to try and entertain them, and it never kind of sat well with me.
And those rural towns, you mean?
Yeah. And it's one of those things where a lot of the gigs we turn up to, there wouldn't be any music, and so the audience would just like be talking really quietly because they don't want to talk too loud in case someone hears them, because there's no atmosphere. And that frustration kind of grew in me, and it was like, I don't like this, so I'm going to try and do better, if that makes sense. And so I kind of created Kinetic Comedy just to kind of showcase diverse comedians with a diverse crowd was our main thing. It's kind of celebrating people's different cultures rather than kind of being afraid of it, as a lot of people seem to be. And so it was a case of, it started off with me just getting my groups of friends together, because my group of friends is quite diverse. And then it kind of exploded out of that.
and getting different comedians on, such as Johnny and loads of others, and it felt like a nice way of kind of creating a nice vibe in the scene that there wasn't really a place for, because you'd have like black comedy shows, you'd have Asian comedy shows, but you wouldn't necessarily have mixed, and you definitely wouldn't get any advertisers being mixed. And so our thing was like, no, this is it. We're gonna go in to be all inclusive and diverse. Let's do it and let's celebrate it. And yeah, we've been going ever since. And now we're heading to the major festivals this year. We're doing Latitude Festival, Leeds Festival, Reading Festival. We've got Johnny Cocker's gonna be there. Mo Gilligan's gonna be there. So a whole bunch of different people. So I'm really looking forward to it. Really.
How do you go about getting yourself on a festival circuit? Do you have to holler at them? Do they holler at you when you are ready? How does it work?
Kind of the organizers kind of aware of us for a while, and it's been a case of just constant communication, trying to get in with them, and then eventually it was like, yeah, no, this is the right time for it. And because we've been going for so long, it's a thing. We've been going for 8 years. People can check the back catalog. There's like we've put the work in basically to kind of earn the right to kind of be in some of these places.
Awesome, man. So Latitude.
Yeah, man. I like Latitude. Middle class festival, but it's cool though. It's got a nice vibe to it. It's got a real nice vibe to it, man.
Yeah, you bringing out Johnny with you as well?
Yeah, of course. Johnny always accompanies me on
You looking forward to it, Johnny?
Yeah. I met my fiance at Latitude.
See, there you go.
Now that's a story. Now
yeah.
Fuck killing time.
Yeah. Basically, we were doing a gig at Latitude on one of the days, and the night out before, I went out on a bit of a rampage, absolutely battered in a field, wandered over to a girl who seemed similarly battered, so I thought, I'm still in here.
Didn't even need the Heelys.
Yeah, and we were just having a chat, and it turned out she lived near me, so I was like, wicked, this is all good. Little kiss and a cuddle later.
Married.
We're engaged now. Guys, younger viewers, dating really is that easy. It really is.
You don't need Tinder and all those other apps.
Exactly.
Were you wearing wheelies?
No, because it was in a field, so that's the only reason I took them off.
You turned my mic off.
He's dead.
He's wearing the 4x4 version, doesn't he? The off-road version.
There you
if
go.
If you took the time to build off-road versions, that would be... I'd be impressed.
Get the spikes
and also
on,
even more scared that somebody took the time to make those.
The off-road versions are just like the old school skates before inliners. Do you remember the four blocks?
The roller skates.
Yeah, the roller skates. And if you put like serious tread on them, you start going up hills with it. It's just digging.
Mate, when you're checking the tread count on your wheelies, that's you got a bit too far.
Well, exactly. That geezer back at his workbench again, just fixing a bit of tread.
Gotta get 33mm.
So, guys, how do you like to kill time? Then start with you. I know. How do you like to kill time?
I'm a gamer, man. I'm a fun gamer. Like the thing about this industry is you don't get a lot of time to game, and so I've picked up a Nintendo Switch last year, and for me, it's my go-to gaming device. Anytime I get like a bit of time where I just need to just like down tools, Nintendo Switch comes out, bit of Mario Kart, bit of Zelda, boom, that's me. Mm. I love it.
But you're very into your gaming though, aren't you? You're not just a casual gamer, I believe.
I'm not casual. I casual game now, like as in the amount of time I have for it. But at the same time, like I've been gaming all my life. Like avid collector of different games and consoles and things like that. My girlfriend, luckily enough, she's heavily into games as well. Otherwise, it would be a bit tough to kind of find some time to play. Hiding away. I never want to be that, you know, that person that just hides away in the corner room and is like, keep it down in there. Like, I'm trying.
She could watch like the younger brother when you're growing up.
Yeah.
Oh,
I hated that. Even though there's two pads, I'm just doing one player. Though.
I used to watch.
Yeah, I used to get given a control pad that wasn't plugged in.
Yeah.
But you fell for that.
Yeah, and I'm sick. Oh, yeah, the wireless console. Yeah.
early adopter.
Yeah. So what about the Tuesday Twitch tune-in though?
Yeah. I do a Tuesday Twitch tune-in with my girlfriend. The reason we do it on a Tuesday is the only day I get to do it.
It's a good day.
Yeah, great day. Most people are indoors, hopefully. But yeah, me and my girlfriend, we put we find a bunch of multiplayer games that we kind of we'll put out there to for people, and then people get their game consoles ready, mm-hmm. and they come and join us and they come and play along with us. We have a lot of love for Mario Kart. We do a little bit of Mario Kart tournaments, all sorts of games. Any games that are kind of multiplayer that people can kind of play along with online. We did like a Drawful one the other day. Drawful's quite a cool game where anyone can play on their phone. So as long as you're watching the stream and you have a mobile phone, you can join in and play with us. And so it's quite cool. It's like a, you get given a phrase that you have to kind of draw. And it's an obscure phrase that you have to kind of draw. Everybody else in the game has to kind of try and guess what it is and stuff like that. So the Tuesday Twitch tune in to it every week is fun, man. You should join in.
I will do. Yeah, I'm involved. Definitely, man. Get involved in that. 100%, yeah. Man. How about you, Johnny? How do you like to kill time?
I'm a big gamer as well. I'm more on Xbox, really, though. Destiny is my go-to game.
Basically, I don't see Johnny when he goes online. He's
if you need to see me, I'm in Warlock form. And always available. I play Destiny's the game that's really... The thing is, like I now said, you haven't got that much time. So for me, rather than spread myself thin, I just get really into one. Like things like FIFA or Pro back in the day when I used to be obsessed with, I haven't got time for something like that now, so I play it every now and then. Mm. So this year I've basically played Madden, because I'm getting quite big into NFL now, Destiny, Tomb Raider, and just things like that, like go intense on one game at any one time, really.
Cool. We went to E3 actually a few days ago.
I know, jealous, man.
Bruv, the new Tomb Raider. Sick.
Is it?
So sick.
Oh, God.
Is it a PS4 exclusive, Billy, or is it going to be a cross platform?
Cross platform.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, there you go, get it Johnny. On the Xbox. Nice. Tidy. Yeah. There's some great games coming out, man.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, sorry, listener. Every episode since E3, I'll be like, oh, my God, E3 is amazing. Games. Some games are so good. But, like, yeah, so many good titles that
I'm
going to be in a treat.
I'm hyped for that Cyberpunk 2077 that I saw the trailer for. It looks amazing.
That is shut down. Parts of E3.
It's like GTA in the future.
Really?
You're going to love it, you know.
That's a fact. I am interested.
You're going to love it.
It's nuts. It's
imagine
like
if people can get augmented in all sorts of mad ways.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's a bit of me.
Yeah. By like the end of the first day, it was invitation only to their room. No press was allowed in there without an invitation because it was just oversubscribed. It was ridiculous.
See, I've seen what Destiny 2's DLC, which after the first game, when they dropped the Taken King, it was better than the first release. Mm. And it's looking like that again. Because Destiny's, it's been a game where it's lost a lot of its gamer base because it was just treading water. And I think at this stage they've realised they've got to pull the finger out, otherwise everyone's done.
You have to. 100%.
You can't muck about these days. There's too much choice.
Exactly.
There's way too much choice. You can't muck about.
They got lazy, and now they have to do everything. You know?
You're lazy.
You're lazy.
It's a lack of effort here.
You're not trying.
Where's the content? I mean, you know. And you just, when I'm playing online, it's just a bunch of, you know, disgruntled Americans going, oh, for God's sake, Bungie. That's all I've got. Bungie, what are you doing? So, yeah. We'll see what happens.
When people are cussing the developers in there.
That's cold. You know, yeah. That's cold. You must hit. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, the other thing I do to kill an AI as well, like I was saying to you earlier, podcasts like this, which is fantastic, but also there's one that I'm recommending at the moment, In the Dark season 2. Not season 1's alright, but season 2 is an absolute madness. It's about a real, well, dare I say, injustice in Southern America. A geezer has been sent down for a quadruple murder for 21 years, has had 6 trials, and
did he do it though?
You got to listen to some of the things, the way this case is built.
So if he's had 6 trials, I presume the first few trials didn't quite finish.
So basically, without, you know, you should listen to it anyway, but he gets convicted and then it gets thrown out. The conviction's unsafe every time. So it's unsafe. Like, who has ever had 6 trials?
Mm.
That is crazy. And the thing is... when the charge gets thrown out, the DA could say, okay, didn't it? But every time the DA's like, I'm having another go.
That's a personal vendetta, that is.
And we're not just talking about, I want you in for life. We're talking about death penalty.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill you.
He's going for the chair, that's it. Yeah. Bro, you get the chair.
Exactly. Once the chair every time, and the geezer's on death row. So it's quite something. Listen to it.
I mean, if you think you suffer from anxiety, that must be a madness.
When somebody's not trying to kill you in like the conventional way with
a knife, but
they're getting you in court.
They're trying to kill you through the paperwork, you know?
Yeah, get killed legally and they can watch.
Nah, exactly.
Through the window, isn't it? They're watching the screen, isn't it?
Can you imagine that? Somebody's saying, I got you.
Yeah.
No. And then they wheel off with their wheelies into
their life they've dedicated to getting rid of you, you know?
And then you get out of it and you go, yes, I got off with that trial. And then he's going, we'll give you another one.
Oh,
and you know, you'll get 21
the
years.
Pressure.
Stress. But the problem is once you get to that stage when the state has been after you so long, they can't afford for you to get out if you're innocent, because they're like, well, then we have someone who we've put in jail for 21 years and he was innocent and, well,
he's going to sue the shit out of you.
It's not just the lawsuit. Like, this is the thing with the whole making a murderer thing. When someone's done 12 years for a crime that they could be proved to have not done, have you then made yourself a problem?
Yeah.
Because if you're in jail for 12 years, could you honestly tell me that if you went in jail for 12 years, you know that you wouldn't come out a little unhinged, a little bit more prone to violence or whatever? You are making murderers. So when there's a guy, how's that guy going to go to sleep if he gets freed? 21 years
Mad.
Robbed.
Mad.
You know, his daughter was 6 months when he got put inside first time. His daughter's Jeez. Now a grown woman. And if you're like, I did not do this, and someone has been trying to kill me, can you ever just go back to going, I mean, you might not need to work, but...
No, you can't work in Sainsbury's after that.
No. I mean, first of all, how do you let that go? How do you let the... Because that DA, you could be coming after him going, look, I'm going to...
I wouldn't lie, I'd have to go after the DA.
I'd probably have to do the crime after I've just done that time.
Yeah, on the
That's
DA.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That is what I'm saying. Because there are a couple of people that you could go around and go, they've got to go. And then you end up doing, like you say, doing the thing that you've originally been charged wrongfully for in the first place.
Balancing the books. I mean, some would call it that.
Balancing the books. Yeah.
Call me the auditor.
That sounds like the special move of a wrestling character called the accountant.
Oh, but he's gonna balance the books.
For goodness sake, he's got a family.
Ring the goddamn bell. What was that video name wrestler back in the day in the '80s?
$1 Million Man.
That's
Ted DiBiase.
Ted DiBiase. That's the one.
There was the IRS man, but
IRS man.
Yeah, the IRS geezer. He was one, but I don't think his special move is balancing the books. We could write for WE.
I'm just saying, yeah. Balance Mick Foley, if you're listening, right? Yeah,
we want him to come back again.
Yeah. Oh, I'd have him back as the accountant. Yes.
Yeah. The accountant, yes. Mick Foley. Yeah.
Yes.
Cleaned up.
Yes. Yes.
Cleaned up his act.
Oh man, that'd be amazing.
Wow. Another the second move, like The Rock had Rock Bottom and people's elbow, would be the Panama Papers. He's going for the Panama Papers from the top.
Yes.
Where's he gone? Where's he gone?
This could go. This could go forever. There's so much. Oh man, can you imagine him? The recession years.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Oh, quality stuff, man.
That'd be his people's elbow, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Recession.
Yeah. Oh man. It's not even recession.
Devil's tail. He'll never recover.
Oh man. So there's a lot of young comedians out there. They want to get into comedy. They want to be funny, right? Yeah. I'm one of those people that thinks I'm funny, not that funny, right? But if I want to learn to be funny, what kind of tips have you got for me? You were funny guys.
Chuck yourself in the deep end. My thing is, first thing is, you got to get rid of that fear.
What fear?
You got to get rid of the fear of performing in front of people. That is usually what comes when you're trying to be funny. Because the thing is, like, when you're it's trying to make people laugh is very different to kind of like acting on stage and stuff like that. Because you're backed up with you're just performing, and it's down to your acting. Whereas this is your specific goal is you have to make people laugh. Otherwise, that's it. It's game over. You failed. And so your thing has to be is like, you have to be confident in yourself, and you have to be confident in performing in front of people. So my thing is to chuck yourself out in the deep end and try it. Because there's nothing. People always think that the number one thing people have about comedy is they're always scared of dying on stage.
and like being on stage and no one's laughing at them. And it's like, once you get past that fear, it's fine. You can start kind of trudging through the, you can start trudging through and finding your own feet once you get that rid of that fear. I think that fear, it stops a lot of people from acting on things because they don't want to die, because that's the end, that's the disaster. Or am I talking rubbish?
Is it kind of like Bane and Batman, or to get over the fear of dying, you must die, should we say? You know, you must become the dark.
Yeah.
Born in the light. Born in the light.
I think...
That was a really bad connection to a film. Is it kind of like that Batman thing? Is that what you're trying to say? Yeah,
I thought that was a good analogy, personally. Okay, I thought that worked.
Yeah. I didn't. the thing is, I know it's right. Like, you got to get up there. My main advice would always be write from personal experience, because when you're trying to come out, you're trying to come up with ideas that are funny, but obviously there's a bunch of other people all trying to come up with ideas that are funny, and you end up talking about the same things, the same nonsense, and it ends up like the stuff you've been saying, you know, to set you apart. It's very hard because you're all talking about, oh, what did Trump do or something like that, you know. Mm. If you write for personal experience, no one can write the same stuff as you, because it didn't happen to them, it happened to you. Mm. And audiences are smarter without them even realising. You can get a sense of when things are true, and you can get a sense of when things have just been massaged for effect.
Fabricated, yeah.
And to be honest, it goes that way. Like, the stuff that's based in truth always does better. I think in terms of getting on stage, absolutely, it's a good bit of advice. Just get up there and do it. But in general, like, it's funny that Arnell said about the, fear of dying. I remember someone told me when I first started comedy that Dave Chappelle had said, when he first started out, there was a big show that they used to do in the New York Empire. And it was kind of like a gong show or whatever. Mm. And he said, for years, I just couldn't do that because I thought, oh my God, it's a banged out arena. Imagine if I died. Like, if I died there, that would be the most embarrassing thing ever. Mm. And one day he got the courage up to do it. He's like, let me go and do this show. Went out there, and straight away his biggest fear came to reality because he died. Like, straight up, they weren't going for his stuff. They hated him. They're boo, boo. And then he got off stage and he just smiled and he went, wow, that wasn't even that bad. And he said that was what actually helped him go on, because once I conquered my biggest fear and thought, you know what, it's not actually that bad, then anything else didn't scare me. Mm. Well, I'm only going to die again somewhere else. It's probably got less people. And so that was how he, got the kind of courage to keep going.
So to get over that fear, just die. Go out there and do your worst work.
Which is what you said at the start of the podcast, isn't it?
I'm dead.
Billy's just out here living life. Billy knows the secret. He's like, let's start the show properly.
No fear, Billy.
You gave away the Kaiser Soze ending, didn't you, really? You started with it.
I'm dead.
He's had a terrible gig. He's had a terrible gig. He's died, and he gave you the shock ending. Now, if you listen to his podcast backwards, you'll realise
Billy is ahead of the game in so many different ways. What do you have to say about that, Billy?
Nothing.
Yeah, we're on to you, mate. We're on to you. So, if our listener wants to find out where you are and get in contact with you both as a duo or separately, how can they do that, guys? Take all the time in the world and let us know all the ways, please.
You could catch us on social media. We try our best to keep on top of it.
I can't even say I try my best anymore. Sometimes I tweet.
you can catch us on Twitter at Johnny and Inel, mm-hmm. or you can catch us individually at Inel or at Johnny I Cochran. That's the same for Instagram as well. I think on Instagram I'm Inelius. You can catch us what we're doing. Do the Tuesday Twitch tune in. You can catch us doing a whole bunch of different things. Johnny's on MTV. The announcer.
The voice off, yeah.
It's a good gig, that, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not bad. Pays the rent. it's a lovely little setup. It's nice. And I'd get to do it with Jade Adams, who's a wonderful comic. So we have fun, really. And it's one of those things where when I was younger, there were a couple of jobs within TV. I always wanted to know how it worked. And I was going to say this on stage at one point because I didn't know. It's got something there, because when I was younger, I used to think that the person who used to do the intertitles between programs was just sitting there live 24/7.
Watching.
Exactly.
Clock watching, isn't that?
Well, exactly. But, you know, they start their shift pretty good. And next up, it's EastEnders. Or next up, Coronation Street. But then you get into the late hours. Right, it's 1 o'clock, and that geezer with a roulette wheel is coming out next, okay? So he's going to be on for about 3 hours. Turn over to the other channel, you got that little girl with a chalkboard. It's dead on TV. What are you even doing up? So I got to see what it's like to do that, because I'm doing the MTV one. And the other one was when I was a kid watching CBBC, watching acts in the broom cupboard with the puppets. Yeah, yeah. And I used to always think, how does that work? And now we've seen...
Yeah, don't destroy the magic for some of the listeners.
What are you talking about, puppets?
Occasionally, they will get like a sock puppet in, which isn't the main, obviously, the main, they aren't puppets. They're real.
So,
yeah, killed it.
Yeah, you can see Johnny on MTV, though.
And also getting my P45 from CBBC.
But yeah, you can catch us about, man. We're doing lots of different things. I'm in a video game coming up, because voiceover is my thing. It's always been like a passion of mine as a young kid, being able to kind of... I always remember the stories of me and my little brother and my older brother used to do. We used to get the old tape deck, you know, with cassette tape B, put the tape in B, hold down, record and play, and then we used to just like record through the little microphone like hole that was at the top of the stereo. Used to like come up with cool little funny stories that we do, funny voices and stuff with. So it's evolved into kind of doing voiceovers for like games and cartoons and things. And so like, I've always loved that. So you can catch my voice here and there and different places.
Can you tell us what game we can find you on?
You can find me on Dulac and Faye, Dance of Death is coming out soon towards the end of the year. Fractured Space, I think that came out in the last year. A bunch of cartoons as well, and Comedy Central.
Nice.
I'm the voice of that, so you can hear me introduce friends.
Okay. How do you find new ways to introduce friends, though, bro?
I'm gonna do that every week. You'd be surprised. There's a lot of friends.
I'll just be like, yeah, this is the one where Joey does this. That's the actual name of the episode. Yeah. Enjoy
people,
it.
Yeah. People know that I thought the fan base would die out the older we got, because there's hell newer no. shows that are coming now, but the fan base is, if anything, is getting bigger. They do like a thing called Friends Fest every year. It gets bigger and bigger, where they recreate the sets for just people to come and take selfies and things and
really
sells out.
People get pictures in the calf. Yeah. People get pictures on the couch.
Sells out like crazy.
It's probably like the most famous couch, closely followed by Casting Couch, which is the second most famous couch in the whole world. But like friend, yeah, man, I think. On a level, I think Friends came on in the other day, and there was an episode that I hadn't watched. I think it's the episode where Joey was trying to learn French or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's like just makes up words like "hey, je de pouf," like that.
I remember introducing that one.
Yeah, so there you go.
I'm just not interested but in like, Friends. Never have been.
It doesn't hold up too well these days to like modern standards and how society's changed, but people still love it.
Yeah,
there's a lot of fat jokes.
Really?
A lot of it. There was the point where Monica was dressed up in a fat suit. Is everything?
Yeah. That wouldn't run now, would it?
No!
How interesting.
I know they get roasted for homophobia quite a bit as well.
A lot of homosexual jokes.
Mm. Yeah, I was watching some old Ali G stuff the other day from his Channel 4 show, and I was thinking, there's no way you could have that on a Channel 4 comedy show. Some of the stuff that he said was just... Yeah. Now, Twitter
you wouldn't even be able to get in a room to do those interviews.
No way. No. Oh, yeah. Oh, and that as well, obviously. But some of the stuff that he'd say, like, I was just like, that would not run today. How interesting. I can see you guys doing it. I can visualize you doing a cartoon, though, you guys. Definitely could see that. Would you be interested in writing something like that? You've got voices, you've got characters.
Yeah, it's sketch like work. We've watched a few cartoons and things before, but we'd love to do our own one. That would be amazing.
Yeah, man.
We've like dabbled in like animation and stuff on our show where we had like 3D animation like sketches and things like that.
Yeah.
But we'd love to do a cartoon.
That would be wicked.
Yeah. That'd be great.
But they're quite expensive to make, aren't they?
It's not easy.
It takes forever.
Yeah, it does take a long time.
I remember doing a cartoon. It took 2 years to come out, and I was like, rah, I forgot I did that. It was like,
the teams that are needed are massive. Yeah, and also, wow, is that where you're at now? You're doing work. So much work, you're forgetting what
they're
done.
Bits, you know, and then didn't even realise I was on that one. Still, I'm sick, bro.
There's an extra cut in, you know.
I get that when people go, oh, I saw you on TV. I was like, what?
I never used to think that would be a thing where, like, if I got on TV, I'd always know when I'm on.
Mm. No, I don't know.
I play
was,
a baby.
There was one on
CBBC. We've been on TV like 3 times a day and you wouldn't even know, you know.
Yeah, there was one on CBBC that's come out recently that I was on, which was called Animal TV, and it's basically like animals running a news network for other animals, apparently, obviously, and I'm Terry the Turtle in that. Didn't even remember, because it's been so long ago. But yeah, I mean, it goes like that, really.
Yeah. You know, that's a good thing about online, though, isn't it? And repeating content on these specific CBBC channels now, instead of them just having like 4 hours at the end of every single day.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Because yeah. If you were born after, when did they get rid of CBBC? When did they move it onto its own channel?
I think it was about 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
About that. It was longer than that, because we...
It was just before we... Oh, yeah, it was, wasn't it? About yeah. seven then.
Yeah, I think it was probably just shy of a decade, to be honest.
Mm. Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, wow. It was definitely a... Sorry, by the way, to the people listening, I am sniffling a bit. I've got hay fever. I can't help it.
Getting attacked.
In case they were wondering.
It's all right, mate.
Yeah, just put my apologies out there.
It's like, these A-listers, look at that. He's doing it on the mic.
but yeah, no. So yeah, they done it a while back, but it was good. It's good. It's great to have worked. The thing is a lot of people, if they went straight into doing adult stuff, they're rarely going to go back to do kids once they're there. So it's nice to have moved through the kids thing into doing, you know, more adult stuff now anyway.
Mm. It feels like we've kind of got a good glimpse of how the industry kind of operates from doing it from this route. And so it's not like we're more cautious. It's more a case of we're trying to be, I guess, a bit more savvy with the moves that we make, because we know where certain things can lead to and other things that might be dead ends. And so it's like, yeah. Okay, it's good to kind of keep our eyes sorted. And the one good thing is being with Johnny going through this experience together is one of the golden things that I don't think I'll ever replace, is going through and learning about an industry with someone else and going through the same trials and tribulations as that other person. It's a load off, because this industry is definitely a roller coaster ride.
It is.
And I didn't understand why people said that until kind of actually experiencing it myself. But the fact that I was able to kind of go through a lot of that with Johnny, it's like, it takes a load off.
The other thing is like, coming from CBBC, like, it's weird to say you have fame, because it's not like, you know, you've got women chucking bras at you and stuff, like, you know, at gigs and whatnot. It's not that kind of fame. It's like, I still get spotted now on the street and people come up to me and stuff like that. There's less kind of pressure. Like, if I was someone who was really famous, you've got there's a greater responsibility when you're seen out and about and things like that, you know. And I think that this is why when you see some people off like X Factor or whatever, they have that instant high level fame. I'm not surprised some of them go under. Like, I really ain't. Like, I'm pleased of where we come from, because for me now, anything we do will just be an increase of the same, you know, the same thing that we've already had. So you can build yourself and make sure you're secure in your life.
Mm.
Because otherwise everything changes, and that's how, I'm not surprised people go off the rails. It's a crazy world.
Lots of people go off the road. But I think it's because it's so volatile and there's no consistency in this industry. Like, if you're hot, you're hot. It's great. But then you could also not be hot, and then that's it. It's like all those opportunities that were once there for you, they're gone. And so it's that roller coaster ride. And a lot of the time, you're not in kind of control of that. And so it's trying to find a space in which you can kind of operate as yourself and be secure while still pursuing your career in the direction you want to kind of take it. And as I said, like, being able to kind of do that with someone else is a godsend in a lot of regards, because without that, I don't know. I don't think I'd still be in this industry, you know. I think some of them lows would be like, ooh, they hit you a bit too hard sometimes. And it's like, oh, gosh, I can't come back from
knocking back on the school gates. you got my job back.
Sorry, I made fun of some of the kids.
Yeah. You're going to get that job now.
What are you saying?
What's that about forwarding some pay as well?
Yeah, man's got rent.
All right, just spot me 20 quid. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much for coming on the show, guys, man. I'd love to have you come back on the show. I'd love you to kill some time playing some games. We're going to we've actually got some.
You're teasing us, man. I can see some game consoles in the corner.
We got it, baby. We got some great titles that we're getting some exclusive plays on, though.
Awesome.
And because we know what kind of games you're into, we can tailor those to you as well.
Yeah.
So
okay.
We'll give you a shout. And we've got some great multiplayer games on the way as well, which you can both play together.
Nice.
Or against each other. But yeah, this has been How to Kill an Hour. I've been Marcus Bronzy.
I've been Inel Tomlinson.
And I've been Johnny Cochran.
That's all right. Oh, and before we let you go, howtokillanhour.com is our website where you can find out about everything we do to kill time. You can watch ways that we kill time. You can read about ways we kill time. And of course, we'll let you know about the podcast and everything we drop on the site if you sign up to our newsletter. All right? Stay blessed.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.